One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
Waste not, want not, four little words that echo through the ages and are pretty timeless, certainly in the 21st century. And so it's a delight, as ever, to be able to welcome the co-founder of Too Good To Go, a company that actually specializes in avoiding food waste, back to the program. Of course, it's a hearty welcome to Jamie Crummy. How are you, Jamie?
I'm very good, thank you. And thanks very much for having me on this morning.
Always a delight to feature you as a good self, Jamie, because there's always a sensible message behind what you're talking about. And this time around, of course, it's looking towards the Jubilee, the parties that are being held, with an average street party attended by 46 people or so on. That's a lot of stuff that's going on there and potentially a lot of food going to waste.
Certainly so. And, you know, this is why it's so important for us at Too Good To Go to be talking about this message, because, as you know, at Too Good To Go, we are an organization which is all about fighting food waste. And at the core of our organization is our mobile app. And it's an app that connects individuals just like myself and people listening with businesses who have surplus food for sale. So you purchase a magic bag, which is a surprise bag of food for a reduced price. But it's this Jubilee weekend why it is so important for us to think about food waste, because, you know, we're going to be spending on average, you know, £44 more on food this weekend than we would at any other time in the year. And with all of this as well, there's going to be a huge amount of food that is potentially going to be wasted. So we need to start thinking about ways in which we can reduce our food waste, but also get a bit more creative in the kitchen as well.
And generally, Jamie, what are the main kinds of foodstuffs that do tend to go to waste when you've had a party gathering? Is it all a case of, well, the vol-au-vents obviously go, or maybe it's the jelly and custard, I don't know, or is there a case of it's the least popular foods that tend to be put to one side?
A very good question indeed. Well, I'm sure you've been in a similar situation to myself, where, you know, you're hosting a party and you don't want there to be or you want there to be enough food for everyone. So what you end up doing is you over cater to an extent, you put more food on the table than you thought you would need to. And so there's ultimately going to be food that is wasted. So the largest parts of food that are going to be thrown away this weekend, you know, from our research, it shows that it's going to be like buffet party style food that is going to be left over. And so this will be things like, you know, your sandwiches, you know, the coronation chicken, followed by things like coleslaw and sausage rolls. So lots of tasty food that's going to be wasted, but food that we can avoid by just getting a bit smarter in terms of how we're going to prepare, how we're going to plan.
I would have thought it's a useful branding exercise for street parties to market themselves as sustainable street parties, and this presumably could feed right into the Too Good To Go campaign.
Certainly so. And, you know, what I would really encourage people to do, as I say, is get a bit creative when it comes to catering for your street parties. Or if you're going to a street party, you know, don't feel like you can't do something yourself. You know, you can bring your own Tupperware to a street party, ensure that any leftovers can be brought home and enjoyed or eaten the next day or in days to come. And then for those that are hosting them, you know, what we can look to be doing is to actually find ways in which you can source food more sort of effectively. So one of the ways we can do that is by, you know, utilizing the Too Good To Go app. You know, you can rescue food through the app to cater for your street party, but other ways as well by, you know, using up some of those leftover ingredients. So think of, you know, the tops to your strawberries, you know, using that in things like punch bowls or even in jugs of water. Small things that make a big difference.
I noted that the research suggested that 51% will look to reuse our party leftovers. That still leaves 49% who presumably don't care at all. I mean, maybe that's a bit harsh, but you know, it is suggesting that there's clearly a way that many people have to go to actually realise that actually you shouldn't actually leave waste around. And, you know, the notion of actually leaving a portion on your plate for politeness, as we've discussed before, is not really the sort of thing we should be encouraging.
Definitely not. No, we should be encouraging everyone to enjoy the food in front of us. As I say, take it home if they can, or even let's start utilizing our freezers as well. You know, let's remember our freezer is a pause button for freshness, so we can ensure that all of that food can stay fresh and delicious and use it for the following weekends or the following days when we have friends over enjoying what I hope is to be some more sunshine.
And what will you be doing with Too Good To Go, Jamie, over the Jubilee celebrations? Are you already fully booked up? I suspect your social calendar is already sorted out, or are there the other plans? Or is it just a case of you just got to relax and unwind?
Well, for me, I'm going to be heading out on a rowing trip. So I'm going to be out on the Thames, stopping off at some Too Good To Go places, enjoying some food, rescuing some food as well, and then getting back on board to row down the river.
Fantastic. And where can one go to find out further information about the Too Good To Go food app and more?
Yeah, I would encourage everybody to head to the App Store or Play Store. You can download the app from there. It's very simple to download, and you can start rescuing food straight away. Otherwise, head to our website at toogoodtogo.co.uk or to our social channels where we're very present on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn. And you can find out more information there alongside some further tips and tricks on what to do with your party leftovers.
Jamie Crummy, co-founder, of course, of Too Good To Go. Huge thanks as ever. And let's hope we speak again in the very near future and see an improvement in terms of people recycling their food waste.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, and speak to you soon.
Okay, so the cost of living crisis is certainly something which most folk are probably aware of, but what about the vast number of carers who are based, obviously, within Britain? We've spoken about them before, of course, in many ways an unpaid army without whom a whole range of issues will be taking place. More than half of unpaid carers actually say that the amount it costs them to look after someone else has gone up in the last 6 months. With 85% spending more on energy and 87% effectively noting that the price cap rise upcoming in October will make it even harder to care. So to maybe find out one possible way in which this can be addressed, and at least we can start beginning to appreciate how to coordinate our bills and such like, we're delighted to welcome home energy expert from Smart Energy GB. That's the wonderful Philippa Brown. How are you, Philippa?
I'm well, Alex. How are you?
Yeah, all good. But certainly in terms of the overall outlook, it does seem as though people could be getting very stressed out about energy never-ending spiral upwards, and obviously knowing how they can actually control that. So how can smart energy effectively start saving money and indeed at least addressing issues in terms of how you can reduce your costs?
Yeah, as you say, there's a wonderful army of people out there who help out friends and family. This is, you know, this is just sorting out your dad's bills or doing shopping for your neighbour. And they're doing lots of things, as we all do, to help out our community and friends and family. But people are, as you say, worried about energy. They're spending more on energy. They're worried about the price cap rise due in October. And so we're trying to look at what things you can do now to prepare for that period of time. And a couple of things that people may not even have thought about are like getting a smart meter for the person that you care for. And then you won't get caught out by the price rises because you will see on your in-home display how much you're spending and how much it's costing you. So you'll know what that bill is going to be before it arrives. And you can use, you know, your in-home display to see how efficient some of your appliances are, how your heating's working. So I think that's something we know people haven't necessarily thought about till now, but can help give you that visibility and that control. Another thing that carers can do is look at things like draft proofing. You know, simple tip, go into your DIY store. They sell insulation strips you can put around windows and doors very cheaply. Again, lots of our heat escapes through the windows and doors. So, how can you insulate now to make sure you're not spending any more than you absolutely have to? And then the third thing is think about looking at your larger appliances and equipment and making sure that they're serviced and that they are functioning well now. So things like, you know, your stair lifts and mobility equipment for the person that you help out, or if they've got any essential medical devices powered by electricity. So getting a smart meter, thinking about insulation and just servicing those appliances and equipment are three simple things that you can do now to help you prepare for those more challenging autumn and winter months we've got coming ahead, particularly for that person that you care for.
And that's obviously dealing with energy consumption in the home. People who are actually traveling in the summer months are probably still noticing the cost of fuel is going up and up and up, but that's another issue entirely. In terms of the strategies you put forward there, Philippa, is it important to obviously ensure that people don't get overly anxious about these kind of things? Because certainly the media in general do tend to talk about the never-ending spiral upwards, and that can have an impact, even if you're looking at a smart meter and saying, well, yes, we just got to stop everything.
Yeah, we're certainly, that is absolutely not my advice to turn, you know, to stop those essential medical equipment for a start. But yes, I think, you know, people are worried, but for a lot of people, the worry is, you know, they're reading things and they're hearing things, they know prices are going up, and the worry comes from not knowing what to do and not having any visibility of what that spend is. So I think one of the ways to give yourself back control is to start, you know, looking at these steps and having a bit of knowledge around, okay, here's a couple of things I can do. Here are the steps that I can take that are going to help. And then also you know, if you've got an in-home display with your smart meter in the home, this is where I'm spending energy, and knowing when those bills are coming. So, you know, on your display, seeing what you're spending daily, weekly, monthly, and helping, using that information to help you create your household budget. So this is about, you know, taking back control and getting that knowledge and using that in a positive way to alleviate the anxiety that comes from just having no idea what's going on, you know, and particularly for the person you care for, because, you know, these are our friends, our family members, our neighbors who we care for and love dearly. So, you know, we're worried about ourselves, but we're equally as worried about them. So being able to kind of pop round and help them out with these things is really useful. And, you know, if you're responsible for the bills, the energy bills of someone, or you're named on their account, you are eligible to make this request yourself. So, it, you know, it's a small thing that you can do now to help you prepare.
You mentioned, obviously, the notion of ensuring homes are better insulated and so on. Even something fairly simple, such as wearing warm clothes, can actually be a way of actually ensuring that you're kept reasonably warm. I know it seems fairly obvious, but it is probably worth noting that maybe we do need to acknowledge that we can't necessarily sort of use summer clothes all year round with the current sort of cost of energy.
Absolutely. You know, we're a pretty savvy nation. We're pretty cost conscious, and we are already thinking about this. We know that carers are already preparing for the winter by, you know, ensuring that they've got those warm clothes, or that the heating's working properly and the appliances are working properly. So, and starting to think about how do they help the person they care for use less energy. So there's lots of, you know, simple small things, and I think this is the kind of area where we're going to have to take small actions, and they're all going to ladder up to have a, you know, to have an impact on what we're spending and giving us a bit more peace of mind. So we're just encouraging people to take back a bit of control and in that process.
smartenergygb.org, presumably the best place to go to for further information.
Absolutely, do visit our website for further advice and information, and more about how you can get your smart meter from your energy supplier.
Philippa Brown, home energy expert from Smart Energy GB. Huge thanks, and keep on saving energy.
Falling into you, baby. Even electricity can't compare to what I feel when I'm with you. Baby, giving up my ghost for you. Now I'm see through. You give me a feeling so strong. I know you've been treating yourself wrong. So let me care for you. Ooh, baby, I'ma love you differently. I'll give you electricity, give it to you.
Well, it's always great to actually welcome back a seasoned communicator and broadcaster to the Midweek Drive. And Sam Perdue is indeed in pole position with this fascinating information and indeed interview with one of the University of Lincoln's BA Communications and Public Relations superb graduates.
So joining me is Christine Green, who is one of our wonderful alumni from the Communications and Public Relations course. Christine, you have got some amazing news to share with us. So congratulations, because I know what it is. But sort of just to tell people who are watching is that you have been honoured by the Queen in her birthday honours list for the Jubilee, and you've been given a British Empire Medal. How does that feel?
So bizarre. I'm using the word bizarre so many times for so many reasons this week. When the letter came through, but I've known about it for about 4 or 5 weeks now, so when the letter came through, so you've been awarded, you know, a BEM for services to Football Association football in North East Lincolnshire. And I'm thinking, my first thought was, is this has got to be a wind-up? So I genuinely rang the number on the letter to make sure that it wasn't a wind-up. And they, I think it wasn't the Cabinet Office, it was something somewhere. And they're like, no, genuine, congratulations. I was like, oh my God. I just started laughing because I'm like, this is just bizarre. My daughter, she was home from school, she wasn't very well. So she'd sort of see me open the letter. She's crying, and I can't get my head around it because I'm quite a humble person. So the stuff that you don't do for recognition. You just do because it's the right thing to do and a good thing to do. So for somebody to take the time to fill in, I know it's not an easy, quick form to fill in, to take the time to do it is really, really appreciate it. Really do.
Do you know who's filled it in?
No idea. I've been trying to work it out, and I thought, right, I think it might be this person. And then when the Cabinet Office rang me and they give you a lot more detail about the reasons why, I'm thinking, no, it's not that person. So who can it be? So I've got a couple of ideas, but I'm not going to say anything to them. I'm not going to. So it's up to them whether they, whoever it is, decides to say something. But no, it's a genuine privilege to have been nominated and then accepted.
So since you've left Lincoln, and actually during your entire time at Lincoln while you were studying our degree, you had a huge involvement with Grimsby Town. You are a lifelong fan is probably how I would describe you and how I remember meeting you all those years ago now. Sort of talk us through a little bit about what you do at Grimsby Town.
What do I do? What don't I do? So chair of the Mariners Trust, so that's the supporters trust. To give a real good voice to fans in the football club, supporter liaison officer, which is sort of a similar role, sort of a conduit between fans, more around match day issues and concerns. But I'm also worked my way up onto the board of the club as well, so I'm the first ever female board member of Grimsby Town Football Club as well. So quite a number of roles there.
And why do you do it? Why do you do it?
I love it. I love it. It's as this week has shown, with all sorts of stuff going on, it's no 2 days are ever the same. You can wake up. I will wake up on a Monday morning and think, there's not a lot to do today. And you guarantee something happens. It's literally a 24/7 situation. And you do it because you love it. And I absolutely love it. There's no better job, no better place to be.
Looking a little bit more at celebrating your BEM, British Empire Medal, because there's so many different, so many different ones. What are you going to be doing to celebrate? Are you going to do anything?
No, I haven't got time. I'm going to London this weekend because Grimsby Town are in the final. Hopefully it's a double celebration. I genuinely hope it's a double celebration. If not, we'll let the dust settle and we'll have a celebration a little bit later on, I think.
Do you think it's going to change you as a person getting your medal?
No, not a chance. No, not at all. I say I've known about it for 4 weeks and I was at the club yesterday packing orders and doing all sorts of stuff. So no, absolutely won't at all. Hopefully it'll give more opportunities for me to get involved in different things, but as a person, no.
And what do you think the reaction is going to be when this news comes out, that people find out that you've been given this? What, friends, family?
I think with my mum, because I've not told anybody, so my mum will be, what have you managed? Because my mum doesn't understand the whole football thing. She knows I'm into football, but she just doesn't understand it, so I don't. So she'll be like, what have you done to get that? But I think overall, I hope that the reaction is a positive one, and that people see and know and understand some of the work that I do and the hard work that I do that's given me this opportunity to receive, you know, the BEMs.
Thank you very much, Christine, for chatting to us, and massive congratulations. It's such a wonderful thing to have and see our graduates go on to wonderful things.
Shine on, shine the lights on me. And all of my life, so that much more I see.
Like
Seems a long time ago when Bobby McFerrin had a hit with Don't Worry, Be Happy, but easier said than done will probably be one of the key things to bear in mind as we look at some of the recent findings when it comes to children in Lincoln. Apparently they're worrying more and more about issues that would previously have been the concern of their parents, with the top worry being the cost of living crisis. Now, to talk us through this, we've got two fabulous souls to actually hopefully address some possible solutions and pointers, at least. First of all, from the Co-op, who of course is a leading schemes in trying to solve this. We've got the wonderful Danny Matthews. How are you, Danny?
Very well, thank you, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. And we've also got the Director of UK Youth, of course, the wonderful Kaylee Wainwright. How are you, Kaylee?
I'm good, thanks.
Kaylee, let's just talk us through this research, because it really is quite shocking that children are so stressed out literally by life and so on at a period of time where obviously the traditional line would be, well, they should be having the time of their lives and not fretting about it.
Yeah, they absolutely should. I think, you know, it's really worrying that the biggest concern for 10-year-olds at the moment is the cost of living crisis. I think, you know, they have access to more information and media through digital and things like phones than they ever have. I mean, we all do, don't we? And I know myself, actually, it's very hard to switch off from that. And I think back to when I was 10, I didn't have access to that. I had access to the news either when I was having my tea at 6 o'clock in the background, all through my parents, and often that was quite filtered, really, wasn't it? So it's a lot for them. We can't protect them from that. And I think for a lot of young people and children, they are physically living in environments that are suffering as a result of the cost of living crisis. They're seeing their parents really worry about how they might pay their next bills, the rising costs, especially of gas and electric, you know, the employment and jobs kind of crisis at the moment. And after being at home for 2 years as a result of the pandemic, where everything, they haven't had that release to connect with people as much and get out and burn off some of that energy and connect with support around them, that's a lot for them to worry about.
I mean, Danny, were you surprised by these findings? Because clearly the Co-op are doing a lot of things to try and help and assist within this. But that very stark finding about the sheer numbers of people who are fretting. And I know you can turn around and say, yeah, but you could be a Ukrainian refugee. It could always be worse. Well, that doesn't necessarily help the matter, does it?
No, absolutely not. And I think that, you know, it'd be wrong to draw comparisons between individual circumstances for certain. Sadly, I wasn't actually that surprised by some of the results of the finding as someone who works in this sector, and that's a really sad thing to have to say. I think there's a number of challenges which young people are facing, and cost of living is one of them. The fact that obviously they've lost a lot of education as well as a result of the pandemic, and this kind of consideration that lots of young people feel that there is an opportunity for them in where they live, all adds to the melting pot of concern really for young people. So yeah, some real challenging times ahead for lots of members of society, but particularly for young people as well.
Kaylee, let's turn to yourself again as Director of UK Youth. You're looking and you're one of the experts in terms of youth opportunities from that point of view. What are the kind of concrete things that you're putting in place to hopefully address these issues?
Yeah, well, at UK Youth, we support a network of over 8,000 local youth organisations. And so we're really privileged and to be able to really get insights and hear from youth workers what's happening on the ground. One of the things we're really calling for is more investment and in youth work and youth services. Over the last 10 years, the sector's seen over £1 billion worth of cuts. We know that where young people have access to youth workers and volunteers in their community, they have better outcomes. You know, we also know that at the moment youth work provision is really limited in the most deprived areas. So if you look at that and then add on the statistics around poverty, deprivation, young people's access to jobs in those areas, more needs to be done to drive that investment forward. And not one organisation alone can solve that. So we're really calling for a better joined up approach between government, businesses, schools, youth sector services to actually look more creatively at a really hyper local level. What does good look like in terms of a youth offer? And we want to be driving that conversation and creating the space for young people to have their voices heard in that as well.
Danny, let's talk about the parents for a moment. I mean, we could always blame the parents, but we shouldn't. So that's just a matter of course. But in terms of that, what are your thoughts in terms of if there's a parent listening to this on Siren Radio, they're kind of saying, yeah, tick that box, my child's worried. What are the sort of things that can be put in place to help parents?
I think the first step, and I suppose if parents already acknowledge that, is the kind of halfway there to a point, is to listen, to have an open conversation with the young person that you might support or care for or be connected with, to hear what their genuine thoughts and feelings are, and take action accordingly. And I think one of the key things there is to truly understand and take an action yourself as a parent, to understand what does the current youth landscape look like in your area. So where are the services? Where are the opportunities as well? One of the biggest barriers for young people is just not knowing what's out there for them and how to access those opportunities, be that youth services and youth work, or actually be that employment as well. So I think it's about understanding what's available to you in the local area, which clearly in some areas of the country there'll be more than others, and that's kind of one of the biggest challenges that this research really shows up. But yeah, having an open conversation with the young person is really the starting point, and then connecting those individuals into the services and provisions, be that private or public funded provisions in and around the local area, is a great way of starting. And then I think that the key point, which we don't cover off too much, is about reassuring your young person as well, helping to build their confidence, and making sure they don't feel like they're alone on this journey as well, because that is clearly one of the biggest worries around loneliness for young people as well.
Ailey, we hear a great deal about levelling up. We hear the government giving an awful lot of rhetoric to that particular agenda. Are we anywhere close to actually getting to a genuine case where somebody living in Lincoln, for instance, will be as relaxed and as calm about their opportunities as somebody who basically is currently going off to Eton or Harrow?
I mean, no, absolutely not right now. And I think lots more needs to be done to tackle that. And, you know, it's great that this is on the agenda for government and that's been laid out. But that's just like literally the first step. And it's going to take time and it's going to take people working together to really address it. And levelling up will look different for different people in different areas. You could have two people in different parts of the street, and what they feel that they need to have access to these opportunities is different. We need to engage people in the conversation about what does it mean to them, and what does access to opportunities mean to them. And we need to, like I said, bring different people around the table, led by the communities that this is really affecting, to think about what the solutions are. And I think investment in social infrastructure as well as capital and, you know, the actual and actual jobs is really needed to make that really sustainable.
And Danny, we're heading into, or indeed going through the whole Platinum Jubilee celebrations, where clearly there's a focus on being happy, being positive and that sort of things. Is it important to actually ensure that we do listen to our young people, that this isn't just a case of, oh, well, you know, when I was a child, we had it lots of stuff with yourself. Things have changed. There are other challenges that they're faced with, hence the results of this research, presumably.
Absolutely. I think, you know, to the point around... you know, kind of drawing conclusions from your own lived experiences is sometimes helpful, but can also sometimes paint a very different reality to the situation that young people face. So listening to them and the challenges that they face is really important. And the pace of change, I think, in society at the moment, week to week, sometimes if not year to year, is frightening. And listening to
your Facebook, your TikTok, your Twitter, yeah, your Instagram, yeah, which one do you choose? It's a nightmare. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, lots of things to consider for young people, for certain, and lots of different media channels to consider. And I guess there's an ask there on parents to draw back to that question, Alex, around making sure that you're supporting your young person to find reputable sources of the truth. Should we say?
Okay, there's so much more we could talk about, but Kayleigh, we need to draw to a close. So where can people actually go to if they've been stimulated by what we've been talking about today and want to find out more about either the excellent work you do with UK Youth or indeed the Co-op as well?
Yeah, so with the work of UK Youth, you can look on our website, ukyouth.org, and through the Co-op, if you search Co-op Youth Opportunities, you'll have access there to the research, the work experience programs, and all the other opportunities that they have to offer as well.
Hayley Wainwright, Director of UK Youth. That doesn't necessarily mean she looks after all the youth in the UK. It's just a wonderful brand that Soil is there, as we said. And Danny Matthews, of course, from the Co-op. Many thanks indeed, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
who would have thought it? People are actually telling lies. Specifically, the motor industry. About 70% of us believe that car manufacturers will lie to customers about their commitments to climate change, with 59% thinking that the car industry is guilty of greenwashing. So to talk us through some of the challenges still being faced in our never-ending battle, it would seem, against the automobile industry and so on, we're delighted to welcome partner and head of consumer protection litigation at PGMBM. That's the wonderful Tony Winterburn. How are you, Tony?
I'm very well, Alex. How are you?
Excellent. Now, Tony, you've acted, or at least PGMBM have acted, on behalf of more than 15,000 claimants in the litigation against, obviously, the car industry. This, of course, being referred to as Dieselgate. It must be a little bit disconcerting to say that, well, situation is normal. These are standard operating protocols. We expect Dieselgate or something similar to occur again.
Well, I think it just shows that the public just doesn't believe that the car industry is serious when it talks about cleaning up its act and cleaning up our dirty air and tackling climate change. And so, as you say, that they expect Dieselgate or something similar is likely to happen again.
52% feeling disappointed, 30%, nearly a third, wanting to boycott individual car brands. Now, obviously, some of the biggies are actually out there, Volkswagen, Toyota, Renault, Nissan, Hyundai, Kia, and so on, all effectively not backing the zero emissions pledge, of course, that was raised last year at COP26. It doesn't really help, does it, from their own public relations perspective, that is, for the companies?
No, it doesn't. And that's what causes the lack of trust with the public. As I say, they just don't believe what the car industry is saying.
Now, it's only a matter of days since Volkswagen agreed an out-of-court settlement with around 91,000 claimants. Clearly, they haven't made any admission of liability. And I do recall, in fact, I've used it with my students, actually, the notion that the chief executive of Volkswagen said they got it wrong. So is it a case of lessons aren't being learnt, that there's still a concern that actually, you know, they'll do anything apart from effectively the truth?
That's what the public believes. That is the lack of trust that the car industry has got. I mean, actions speak louder than words. They're talking the talk at the moment, but the public doesn't believe that they're walking the walk. And until the public believes that they're going to have this lack of trust issue.
I mean, from the point of view of people who are still a little bit confused by matters legal, Tony, could you just basically give us a sort of step-by-step guide to what the Volkswagen out-of-court settlement actually means for, shall we say, the ordinary car driver?
Well, for those 91,000 who were involved in that litigation, what it means is that they will be getting compensation and justice for the wrong that was done to them. In these cars being put on the market under false pretenses, under pretenses that they satisfied emissions limits when in fact they didn't. For the rest of the diesel drivers out there, there's an estimated 8.5 million diesel vehicles on UK roads. So 91,000 in one sense is a drop in the ocean. So If your listeners are diesel drivers and they believe that they may have been affected by this, they can either go to the PGMBM website or mydieselclaim.com to find out about the settlement with Volkswagen and our cases against all the other manufacturers. And they can find out there if they're eligible. And if they are, they can file a claim.
Those of us with reasonable memories can recall a certain drive by the government of the day at the start of the 21st century to say, oh, you've got to go diesel, it's much more cleaner for the environment, etc. Do you think that, in a sense, actually, politicians were complicit in terms of this shift to diesel when people were actually encouraged, actually, to get rid of their petrol models and actually switch to diesel?
I think they were. And one of the concerns that we've got in the UK is that the UK government hasn't done enough to hold the car industry to account. It's been left to individuals and law firms like PGMBM to hold the car industry to account. And really that should be the government's job. So I think you're right. Complicit might be a strong word, but they certainly haven't done enough to rectify the problem.
Well, I suppose at least you could probably say that they weren't parting at the time. Or maybe they were, but that's another issue entirely. In terms of looking to the future, Tony, do you expect more claims to actually come forward against the major car manufacturers?
Yes, we do. As I say, we're already bringing claims against 11 manufacturers, including Volkswagen. Volkswagen have got another claim against them. This claim was Volkswagen 1, and there's a Volkswagen 2. So if you're driving a Volkswagen car that was purchased after 2016, a diesel car, you may still be eligible. And again, I'd suggest that you check out our PGMBM website or the mydieselclaim.com website to see if you are still eligible.
As we look towards the future, of course, there is the suggestion that driverless or autonomously driven cars will be more popular, electric vehicles clearly becoming mandatory. Is there a sense that actually, well, we've been done once by diesel, is the electric car as green as it claims to be? Because, I mean, clearly, if you lose trust in the manufacturers over one issue, it takes a lot to actually restore that faith, I would have thought.
Yes, it does. And that's what the public thinks. The public don't trust the car industry. So that they believe that, you know, diesel gate is one issue, but is there going to be a hybrid gate or an electric gate? And that's the concern that the car industry has got. You know, it's seen as talking the talk, but it's now got to walk the walk.
If you're advising the car industry at present, what would you say? Honesty is the best policy?
I would say honesty is the best policy, and provide justice and compensation to your customers. You got it wrong. Hold your hands up, and you know, A, give the compensation and justice that your customers deserve, and B, learn the lessons from that and move forward properly, and not just with words, but with actions.
Yeah, deeds, not words. Mydieselclaim.com. Again, a reminder, that's presumably the best website to go to if people are listening to this and thinking, do you know, I think I need to check this out, basically. I should actually have a look at that. Will all the information be found there, Tony?
It will, yes. It's got all of the information about the settlement with VW from last week, but also the claims that we're bringing against the other motor manufacturers as well.
Tony Witterburn, lead lawyer at PGMBM. Huge thanks, and keep on keeping on.
Thank you, Alex.